Yeah, I walked the dog, gamed a little, played with a frog.
What does your morning commute sound like?
Hi, welcome to McDonald's.
Can I get a sausage McMuffin with egg and a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, please?
Kids back up, went back home, then I went to...
Here you go, Jim.
Here's to making your morning routine a little better. Right now, mix and match two select breakfast sandwiches, like a bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, a sausage McMuffin with egg, or a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit for just $4. Breakfast at McDonald's. Single item at regular price at participating McDonald's for a limited time.
This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole, Hollywood's bad guy, and so much more. Actor, talent manager, producer, and more. Now he's sitting down with today's top newsmakers from entertainment, politics, pop culture, and beyond. This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole.
Woo-hoo! All right, all right, all right, all right. Howdy, 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 and welcome to 101 with Jasper Cole. This is your host, Mr. Jasper Cole. We're coming to you live from Hollywood, California, Temple Base Studios. This is our new home now. This is our second show that we've done in the new studios, and we're excited to be back. I want to give a shout out to BS Podcast Network. That's going to be our new home. Starting Thursday, April 5th is our first show. We'll be on at 10 p.m. and we're going to be on every other Thursday at 10 p.m. And of course, we'll still be on iTunes and Blog Talk and Spreaker and all those other places like that. But anyway, I don't want to waste any time because I'm beyond ecstatic to have one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. I have to, full disclosure, say that a lot of you may or may not know, in addition to be a crazy actor, I'm also a talent manager. And I have a wonderful client here today who's two-time Emmy nominee, just recently nominated for her brilliant work on Anacostia, playing the role of Beverly Newman. And she's in town this week because she's been nominated for that work as part of the Independent Series Awards, or ISA, which is tomorrow night. And I'm very privileged to be her guest, along with her fiance, George, and a lot of the cast and other members. So without further ado, please welcome Diva-licious Jennifer Bassey.
Oh my God, what a wonderful introduction.
Darling, I could have gone on and on.
But well, you know, I mean, I don't think they know that when I moved out here to California and I met you through my son-in-law, who was you were managing.
He was Bill Bolander, my client.
Yes, who was in the most famous movie of all time.
Oh, Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, he played the killer, and he was brilliant. He said, I have a brilliant manager, and do you want to meet him? And I called you thinking, well, I've got to go back to New York. And I called you, and you said, I did some research on you, and I would love to manage you. I said, well, I have nowhere to live. He said, well, we have a studio apartment in our compound, and I've got to tell you, he... And his husband,
at that time partner,
owned five different, you know, a house and then a studio and then two apartments and another apartment.
We basically rented a closet if we had to, right?
And so I moved in, and I'm telling you, it was extraordinary. It was extraordinary.
It was kind of like Tales from the City, you know, the Amistad Maupin.
Yep.
That was set in San Francisco.
Yep.
We create our own little magical thing there.
And all their animals moved in with me, and they thought I was stealing their animals.
Well, the cats.
The cats did, not the dogs.
The pussies.
Yeah, yeah. All the pussies
all
moved
the
in.
All the pussies. But it's interesting because I had not met Jennifer, but we conversed on the phone for a couple of months. So she basically moved into our place sight unseen, other than photos. And I felt like I'd known you forever. It's only been going on 10 years.
Well, you know, when you meet, like, George, my late husband, you, there's certain people, you know, a lot of people say, oh, reincarnation is BS, you know? But I've got to say, and you and I pick up, like, we don't even say hello on the phone. I mean, you know, we just, you know, it's like, it's a connection, and you know that you feel you've known them before.
Yeah.
And I feel that I... My relationship with my fiancé today is he was married for 50 years and I was married for 30 years and we met and it's my turn. I was taken care of brilliantly by my second late husband. Isn't it horrible? I have two late husbands.
Darling, three was the charm. Darling. They were all the charm. But
I feel that we met, you know, it's my turn. I love him. And you know, it's been a rough time because I think relationships, especially when you get older and all your negatives are still there and you can fight like, oh, my God, you know, I'm not a good fighter. I mean, I never physically do anything, but I can verbally go, oh, really, and shred you to death, you know. So I
just like Mary and Colby on All My Children.
Oh, yes. She was a nymphomaniac alcoholic, but she was mean, too. Yeah, she was.
First of all, if you're ADD and you're listening, go ahead and take some Adderall because Jennifer and I are going to jump and we don't even care. So just know ahead of time, there will be no segues and we will probably jump all over.
Because I'm ADD without meds. So that's it.
I'm ADD on meds.
So that's it.
Lexapro. I need to get an endorsement deal for Lexapro, by the way. But anyway, so I want to start off talking about your most recent brilliant work as Beverly Newman on Anacostia.
Yep.
Anacostia is a really highly acclaimed digital web, I don't like the word war, digital soap that has been nominated and won awards in the past. But tell everyone how this role came to you and how Beverly was presented to you and by the wonderful Robin Strasser.
Well, I have a friend that I hired to do my website, and she did a new website for me. And she said, if you get any messages on your website, they'll come directly to me and blah, blah. I said, okay. So she called and she said, a producer from Washington, D.C. would like to talk to you on the phone. And I said, oh, okay, well, what about? And they said, well, they do a soap there called Anacostia. So I said, sure, give me his number. And I called him, Ben Bryant, who's an angel.
He's wonderful.
And Ben said, Robin Strasser recommended you. I said, oh, my God, Robin, I haven't seen her in ages. Why didn't she want to play the part? He said, she feels that you would be better in the part. So we'd like to know if you're interested. And he said, we film in Washington, D.C., or we film in Connecticut. We have a place in Connecticut. And I said, well, sure. Yeah, because I have Alicia Minshew, who was on All My Children with me. She's on a digital soap.
Right. Tainted Dreams.
And, you know, so I know and a lot of people who
so
are on
many people.
Digital soaps, yeah. And actually, I was interviewed recently, and someone said, well, what do you think? Do you think soaps are dying? I said, no, I think the genre is shifting to the internet. Mm-hmm. I think there are going to be more soaps very soon on the internet than there are on network. Now they're even. They're 4 and 4 at the moment that are recognized.
Well, interesting enough, remember All My Children, when they went off the air, they tried the internet.
That's right.
But that didn't last for other reasons, had nothing to do with the internet.
But
they knew at the time that that's the
way
to go.
That's the wave of the future. Yeah. I really believe that. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I said yes. So they said, we're going to write you a script, and Anthony won't mind. Anthony Anderson wrote, he writes, he stars, he produces,
caters.
He's involved in the editing. So he does, he's a true entrepreneur. He did research. They asked me, what do you like to do best? I said, well, you know, I really do Dead Baby at the Grave really well. Now, what people say, what is Dead Baby at the Grave? And I go, you know, in Pretend, let's say your child on the soap opera. Everybody loves it when their child gets killed or something on television, because when your child gets killed, you get to do Dead Baby at the Grave, which means you cry and you're hysterical and you take tranquilizers, you try to kill yourself. I mean, you do all kinds of things that are very dramatic, and usually you win an Emmy when you get a part like that. Okay. So I said, well, I'd love to do Dead Baby at the Grave and blah, blah, blah. And then they said, well, this is what's happening in the character we're thinking of writing. Now, would you rather be a heroine or do you want to go for revenge? I said, oh, definitely revenge, darling. So about a week before I went to Washington, D.C. to film the scenes they wrote for me, they arrived. And I read them, and I sent them to you.
Yes.
And the first thing I said was, George, he was in the other room, and I ran in the other room. I said, George, this is a brilliant script. Oh, my God, this is a brilliant script. This man is a great writer. I said, what a shame. I mean, this is a script that an actor could be nominated for an Emmy for. That's how good this script is. So that's what I said. Isn't that something?
Ironic.
From my lips to God's ears. So when I got to Washington, I got on the set. Anthony said, you're going to win an Emmy with this. I said, no, I'm not. I've only just started on your show. He said, they have a category called guest star. I said, you're kidding. He said, no, we're going to submit you for an Emmy. And the rest is history. I've been nominated. I mean, what an honor. You know, people said, well, why would you want to do a little series in Washington, D.C., blah, blah, blah. Well, I am presenting tomorrow night.
At the ISA.
Tomorrow night at the Independent Series Awards. And I'll try and I'll tell you what I'm going to say. Anthony wrote it. So you all can get a little background about what this show is like. 9 years ago, you were introduced to the residents of an historic neighborhood in Washington, D.C. We watched as our lives unfolded, sometimes with blatant and unflailing honesty. I'm getting it a little wrong. From addiction to domestic abuse to molestation to male rape. This raw and unapologetic writing has transcended, storytelling has transcended all demographics, leaving the viewers wanting more. So fifty episodes, five seasons, and nominated tonight for 10 Indie Series Awards. This is Anna Costia. I'm still grasping because they don't have teleprompters, so I'm having to learn it. But this will give you, the audience, an idea of what this show is about. Anthony was raped by someone who had AIDS, and on his show, and it's major. It's a major writing, this show. Anyway,
and let's say also it's one of the only predominantly African American
series.
Cast.
It is the only.
Yeah,
I think it is.
Years ago, there was a soap called Generations on NBC.
But that was a network show.
Network show. I actually had like one line on it, but that was groundbreaking at the time because it was all African. Predominantly, all the major characters were African American.
My late husband wrote the second all black musical on Broadway.
$10.
All African American. I never know what to say, which is the most appropriate thing to say. He wrote Timbuktu in The Wiz. They both came out the same year. Melba Moore and Eartha Kitt were in my husband's production. And it really introduced the African American audiences. It was the history of the African Americans. In other words, when they were taken as slaves many hundreds of years ago, they were royalty. They were kings and queens. I mean, they were royalty.
Right.
And so after the show ran for almost a year on Broadway and it toured, my late husband went to a little mailbox place to mail something about Timbuktu. And there was an African American man there, and he said, he looked at the envelope and he said, Timbuktu. He said, there was a musical on Broadway called Timbuktu. And my late husband said, Luther Davis. He said, yes, I wrote it. He said, you wrote it? He said, that show changed my life.
Wow.
He said, I never knew we came from royalty. I never knew that.
Wow.
That we were aristocratic. You know, I mean, he said, that gave me, I don't know, it gave him such self-esteem. And so Luther felt so good about it because basically that's what he wanted to do.
Right.
You know. So,
and also, let's say Luther wrote Grand Hotel.
He wrote Grand
Kismet.
Hotel. He wrote Kismet. And he wrote Lady in a Cage, lots of major motion pictures, and lots of television series. Lots. He wrote the pilot for The Fugitive. He wrote a lot of stuff.
Great stories.
Oh, very funny, which we cannot tell
Joan Crawford,
on your program.
Bless her. For all you animal lovers, Joan Crawford.
I'm not telling
you. She had a magic touch, didn't she, darling?
She sure did.
But I told you we were going to. See, we went from Anna Costia to Joan Crawford masturbating a dog.
That's right.
Allegedly.
Isn't that interesting? No, he saw her doing it. She actually did masturbate the dog.
Okay. Save that for the book.
Okay, now we'll be sued.
by Olivia. who Luther dated. But anyway, so back to Anacostia.
Okay. So anyway, so I went, and yes. And it's wonderful to be directed by the man who wrote it. Because he
who's
said,
lived it.
And he said, because, oh, you should be really screaming there. And of course, I didn't realize I should have, but it was written in bigger print. I should have caught on. Thank you very much. And it was great to have him there because, you know, it just, he kind of orchestrated what we were doing. And I just loved the work. I loved the writing. I loved the people. We had a great time. I called you when yes. I was there. And
we
said,
we have to say that two other soap veterans, Martha Byrne and Elizabeth Hubbard, are going to be are already on the show.
Already on it, and we're doing
your storyline with Beverly in particular is going to interact with Elizabeth
and both of them actually, but yeah. Elizabeth, yeah, big time,
yeah,
big time.
Elizabeth was on As the World Turns for many. Well, they both were.
And Martha Byrne won an Emmy 2 years ago,
and she started. Pretty much as a teenager.
For Anacostia.
Child on As the World Turns.
That's right.
And Elizabeth was on there, like kind of like you and Mary and Colby. All of you were doing the soaps at the same time New York City. So.
Oh, yeah.
But so anyway, so because of Jennifer's great scene in Anacostia, she was not only nominated for the ISA, but like we mentioned, she's now nominated for guest actress in a drama digital series for the Daytime Emmys, which are April 29th?
April 27th.
27th. So you'll be coming back at the end of the month.
Yes.
For
you
that.
Know how much I love flying
I
and packing.
Know, darling. But Jennifer was nominated for All My Children for the iconic role of Marion Colby, of course.
I'm award challenged. I got a nomination for the Soap Opera Digest Awards. And Dick Clark was presenting them, Network, and I had this Marlene Dietrich beaded dress all the way to the ground that I had gotten from June Carter Cash.
June Carter.
June Carter had a whole barn full of clothes, and she said, you just go and get what you want, hon.
I've never heard this story.
Oh, she's so great. So I got this great dress. This dress was so, it was just great, you know, okay? And a friend of mine won right before my category, which was Best Scene Stealer, okay? Okay, so I jumped up, and my zipper totally opened up from the bottom to the top. My whole dress was open.
Marion Colby's style.
Open, okay. And I'm going, oh, Jesus, oh, God, oh, God. Zipping. I turned to the producer. I said, Jesus Christ, zip me up, zip me up. I can't. What do you mean you can't? Just zip it up. It won't go. It won't go. And so I had an actor. I said, if I win, will you carry me up? And then we'll do a gag about Marion, you know. Well, the guy came, and I said, I hope I lose. I hope I lose. Oh, God. I can't go up there with my dress open up. And they said, and the winner is Jennifer Bassey. I went, oh shit. So this guy said, I'll carry you. I said, don't carry me. My dress is open. He said, oh, shit. So I walked up, and these guys said, congratulations. I said, congratulations. I got so excited. I jumped up, and my dress opened up, and I turned around and showed the whole audience, got the biggest laugh. He said, Dick Clark said it was one of the funniest things he had ever seen. Okay.
It's very Marion Colby-like.
Okay, so that happened. Okay, then I'm nominated for an Emmy. Okay. And Kelly Ripa and I are nominated for an Emmy at the same time. And we're both going, da-da-da-da, what are you going to wear? What are you going to wear? So I hired her costume designer. I said, I want a flesh-colored dress with diamonds all over it. And my dress arrived from India. Why he ordered it from India, I'll never know. And it came and it was burgundy. And I wouldn't be cremated in burgundy. I just would not be cremated. I mean, it is the worst effing color you have ever seen in your entire life.
Eggplant.
With ugly beads on it and... I said, I can't wear this. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, would you wear it? Look at it. It's ugly. So he said, I'll get you another dress. Meanwhile, I sprained my ankle. So on the red carpet, I had to wear gym shoes.
Darling.
And then I was pinned into a dress, so I had to kind of back into rooms. So you couldn't see that I was pinned in, and that was my Emmy dress. So I am no longer a war challenge. But
no.
Mercury is in retrograde, so I'm a little nervous about tomorrow night.
And it's eating our brain up. I don't know if any of you follow Mercury in retrograde.
The worst.
For many years, I used to laugh at people who even brought it up because I thought it was ridiculous. And then once I started paying attention to it, I don't know if I started creating the events, but it just seems like things were breaking down and things, I was falling and
people
deals
are dying,
were falling through.
And it's horrible.
Horrible.
It's horrible.
This last few weeks have been hellacious.
And it's going through April 15th.
Tax day.
I'm trying very hard not to jump off a building.
Right. Because the legs are the last to go.
The legs
you
are
need
the last
your
to
legs
go.
To jump.
The legs are the yes. last to go, and then you then jump off a tall building.
But I want to also talk about your more recent role on General Hospital, where you played Quinn.
Quinn Danvers makes me laugh, like Mrs. Danvers and Rebecca. But if you're not very old, you won't know what I'm talking about.
Or Google it for
yeah,
you young
Google
people
it. Rebecca,
listening.
Mrs.
But this
Danvers.
Was another example where, because of Jennifer's resume and her history and her amazing work, Mark Teschner, the casting director of General Hospital, who ironically had cast Jennifer in a feature a couple of years ago mm-hmm. as well, pretty much thought of you for this part. I mean, it was in the breakdowns and you were submitted and he knew your work and loved you. So this was a chance for you to come on to a hit show, another ABC show.
Well, I'm in the hospital, okay? I wake up one morning. I wake up one morning and I'm in pain. And I get to the hospital and they go, oh, your small intestines and everything is scar the tissue and you're going to die if we don't do something. You have two options. We'll either stick a tube up your nose down into your stomach and draw it all out, or we'll operate. And I said, well, how big of a tube? Well, they brought in a tube. It was like huge, this humongous tube. I said, oh, no, that doesn't look like I'm going to. Anyway, so they stick it up my nose. I'm dying. I'm screaming and blah, blah, blah. Okay, now why am I bringing this up?
Because at the same time.
Okay, so I get a phone call. I get a phone call. And they're going to operate because the tube didn't work. Thank you very much to the medical profession.
Right.
And so they're just going to operate. And I get a phone call saying the head writer has recommended you to the producer. And they want to just have you, no audition or anything, just book you
offer.
In to do it. And so in 2 weeks, and I went, oh, my God. I said, oh, great. So I said, can I call you back? And the doctor came in. I said, okay, how soon can I fly? Well, what do you mean? I said, I just got a job offer that I really, really want to do, and I've always wanted to be on this show. He's General Hospital. He said, oh, General Hospital. I love General Hospital. The doctor watched it. You love it. And so I said, well, can I fly? He said, well, you're going to be weak, but you can fly. So I called and said, oh, yes, I'm so happy. I'm not telling them they're going to operate on me that day, which they did. And I came, and Jasper let me stay in his wonderful apartment in Silver Lake, which is near the studios for General Hospital. And I was very frail, but nobody knew.
No, you nobody came knew. Literally how many days after? You'd only been out of the hospital a few days, six,
yeah, yeah.
5 days maybe? At the most?
Maybe a little more than that.
And then you flew cross country. You had all those pages of dialogue.
And I had to wear high heels.
Had to But what I loved about Quinn was she was, while she was upscale and glamorous, she was witty. I thought you brought a lot of humor to her. She was
funny. Well,
they
wrote her. They gave me very good writing. I mean, you know, for a guest person to come on. First of all, Ryan and Risa were adorable. I mean, they couldn't have been sweeter and you know, more welcoming. So I was very relaxed with them, and it was fun. We laughed a lot, had a good time.
It was part of the Mel Landers advice column
ask
story.
Ask Landers. Ann Landers, Ask Man Landers.
That's right.
Ask Man Landers.
Amy
yeah.
and
Nathan.
The two characters.
Yeah. And
so you had a wonderful arc on there.
And I got to see Finola Hughes, who I've known forever. And I got to see Rebecca Budig, and I got to meet Michelle Stafford, who
wonderful.
I love. And I got to see Mark Teschner and gave him major hugs.
You got to work with Frank Valentini.
Frank Valentini, yes, who I, you know, which was great, absolutely great. No, so the whole thing, really, it couldn't
it turned
have been
out
better.
Great. And yeah. then right from there, you got Beverly Newman. So you've had a last year and this year is turning out to be spectacular.
Yeah, and I'm getting married very soon.
Getting married. And
I
then
mean,
also,
probably in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, you've been engaged for about a year and a half,
we've
2 years?
Well, I've only had the ring, a little less
darling.
Than that, this beautiful ring. Thank God we know a diamond dealer. We've been engaged since probably...
You're in Hawaii, right?
In March, it'll be 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, George is wonderful. He's also my client.
And he's younger than I am. Isn't it wonderful, darling?
Mary and Colby, like.
Cradle robbing at my age.
But George is an accomplished actor and playwright on his own. And in fact, he has a new play that he's written.
And he's got Broadway producers who've won 4 Tony Awards who... they want to do a bunch of readings. They want to do a very small reading with a couple of people who really know about the theater and do notes, you know, and then do rewrites and then do another small reading. And then the fourth reading will be for backers because it's a great role for a woman.
Yes.
And, you know, like Jessica Lange, Meryl Streep, Glenn Close.
Of a certain age.
Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Those women could nail the hell out of it, you know. And all the roles are
all
good.
The roles.
There are 4 roles. You read it. It's a good play. It's a great play. And his name is George Bamford. And he's an actor and a writer, and he's terrific.
He's great. He's sitting right.
And he's very good looking.
They're a gorgeous couple together. Yes. Also, Jennifer's going to be on the cover of, or is on the cover
of Recovery Magazine.
Recovery Today Magazine.
Recovery Magazine.
A wonderful magazine because Jennifer.
We have a great press agent. He's my press agent and your press agent.
Dominic Friesen, who actually is recovering from open heart surgery
at 39 years old.
Actually has been in the hospital for 3 weeks, nonstop working on the phone. In the hospital bed.
Incredible.
I think the key is to trap someone in a hospital with no television and no telephone, and then they get...
That's right, and you get great work.
They just never stop. What else can you do, right?
So it's Recovery Magazine is about recovery from addiction, and I've been sober for almost 34 years. In May, it'll be 34 years. And so it was great to talk about, you know, to tell people... The disease has a beginning, middle, and end. It doesn't just have an end. Most people think, well, if they're handling their particular problem, whether you're a drug addict or you're an alcoholic or whatever you are, I'm functioning and I'm working, so I don't have a problem. And they don't understand. You know, when I got sober, I was functioning and working. Major time, working. It's nothing to do, but it's a clever disease, and it has an IQ of about 850, and it's smarter than you are, and it wants you dead. Basically, that's what it is. So we did a long interview about sobriety and how to stay sober one day at a time, and it was a great interview. I haven't seen it yet.
It's on the newsstands, but it's also online.
So is it on the newsstands?
Yeah.
I don't have a copy yet. I'm dying to see it.
I think they sent us some, or Dominic has some. But I think you can just Google Recovery Today magazine, and the online interview and photos will come up.
We'll be on there.
Okay, as well.
Great.
Yeah. So, but I wanted you to talk a little bit about you started, a lot of people don't realize that you started out studying at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts in London. You went from Chicago. Tell everyone about
your... I went from the Playboy Club. I flew, we were all drinking, talk about drinking, and I was too drunk to pack. Somebody said that should be the name of your biography, Too Drunk to Pack. So I asked Bunny Claudia, who was a friend of mine who was drunker than I was. I said, Claudia, will you pack for me? Because I'm going to be auditioning for the Royal Academy, and if I get in, I'm going to stay there. And I said, but don't pack feather boas and evening gowns. Just pack sweaters and pants. You know, I'm going to be a student if I get in. So I arrive in England with feather boas, negligees, and one sweater, one pair of pants. I mean, I had no clothes. I got the lowest entrance marks in the history of the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in 72, don't you love it? And so in 2004, I got a phone call and it went like this. Hello, darling, it's Richard. I said, who? He said, Richard, from RADA, from the Royal Academy. It's the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts celebrating the centennial in this year, and you still hold the record for the lowest entrance marks in the history of the Academy. We want you to fly over, darling, and show them why. We want you to do exactly what you did when you auditioned. So I flew over, and Joan Collins was there, and John Hurt was there. Bless his heart, he's gone now. Tony Hopkins wasn't there. He was in my class. And I went over, and I did it. And people were screaming because I was so terrible.
What did you do?
Oh, well.
Was it a monologue?
Well, no. They send you, I wrote them a letter and said, hi, I'd like to come to your school. They said, oh, Miss Bassey, we take 3 Americans a year. If you want to fly over to England, we take 30 British people. a term, and you'll get in with them. And I thought, well, I like the odds better in England. So they sent me a thing saying, you can pick one of these speeches, and then you bring one of your own. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay. So I picked, unbeknownst to myself, a J.B. Priestley play, who was a very famous playwright in England in the last century, and a speech that everyone in England knew but me, because I didn't memorize it. And so I arrived at the Royal Academy from the Playboy Club, which is another long story, and where I was a bunny for almost 3 years. And this girl said, why do you have your script? I said, well, I'm auditioning for the Royal Academy with a very thick Chicago accent. And they said, well, we all are, but don't you know it? I said, you're supposed to know this? She said, yes. I said, oh, shit. And they said, Miss Passy, you're next. I thought, oh, shit. So I walked in, and they said, this is Sir Michael Redgrave and Dame Edith Evans, and I'd never heard of them. I said, oh, hi. You know, like, I didn't know who they were. I mean, what did I know? So and this man came out of the wings with a long beard. He said, I'm your prompter. I said, what does that mean? He said, if you forget a line, just look at me. I said, oh, all right. So I took the most famous speech in England, and the only line I knew was, I found out after a year he had a mistress. I was supposed to say it with a British accent, which I didn't. And that's the only line I knew. So I said, I found out after a year he had a mistress. And then I looked at the guy with the beard and the wings, and he went, I said, ah, what? And he said, blah, blah, blah. I said, ah, oh, I'm sorry. They said, Miss Passy, you're nervous. I said, well, yeah, I'm really nervous. They said, you can start again. I said, thanks. I said, yeah. Well, I found out after a year he had a mistress. And I looked to the wings again. He went, ah, blah, blah, blah. I said, I'm sorry. I can't hear what you're saying. So I finally thought, I'll just make it up. I didn't know what paraphrasing meant. So I just made up the most famous speech in England. And there was a long pause, and they said, thank you so much, Miss Bassey. What's your second selection? I said, I am going to do the burning speech from Hedda Gabler. And there was a pause, because there is no burning
there
speech.
Is no.
All Hedda Gabler said, and it's supposed to be 2 minutes, right? Oh, okay, here was my audition. I said, pretend this is a fireplace. And I turned my back to the whole group, my back. And there was a fireplace. So I did the audition with my back to them. And I said, I am burning your child, Taya. Burning, burning, burning. Ah!
Oh,
that was the burning scene.
My God.
Well, darling, there was a stunned silence. And they said, well, Miss Passy, thank you so much. I thought, oh, shit, I really messed this one up. So I went upstairs crying, and this young kid said, why are you crying? I said, I flew all the way from Chicago, and I didn't get in. He said, why? I said, I was terrible. And so he went down. I said, I know the secretary of the principal. I'll find out. And he ran down. He said, you got in. I said,
what?
I did. And so I got the lowest entrance marks, and what they said was, she's got stage presence, and she's got a good voice. We'll probably kick her out in the first term. And I graduated top of my class with Anthony Hopkins, so I
Darling.
Was very proud of myself.
Now, in Chicago...
You hadn't heard part of that story,
I
you?
Did not know this. I'm trying to act like I'm picking my mouth up. When you decided, when you were a bunny, to... What, had you had aspirations of being an actress? Or what,
no, I wanted to be a gym teacher.
So what happened?
Okay, Bobby Short, a famous singer now. Today he's more famous, but in
1974.
No, actually it was 1960, 59 to 61.
But
yeah, I flew over in England 61. And Bobby... Dick Gregory, George Burns, Jack Carlin, they were all starting out. In fact, Dick Gregory was a car wash.
And you knew them at the, they would
oh, yeah,
come
they
to
were
the Playboy
at the club,
club
all the time.
Yeah.
And Mabel Mercer, who, you know,
oh,
Mabel Mercer, who, you know, Frank Sinatra sat at her feet for her phrasing. I mean, everybody, you know, these were, I didn't know who any of them were, but I worshiped Bobby. And I always told everyone to shut up when he was singing, you know. And Bobby said, you shouldn't be a singing bunny. You should be an actress. And I thought, well, he thinks I should be an actress. And I was reading a book that I never got through the introduction called The Quintessence of Ibsenism by George Bernard Shaw. I never got through the introduction because it was so complicated, I didn't understand what he was talking about. But in the first paragraph, he said, "The Royal Academy of Dramatic Art is the most famous drama school in the world, and the best." So I wrote them a letter. I said, "Hi, I want to come to your school," and the rest is history.
That's amazing. You know, sometimes...
You know how fate... If Bobby Short, who I hadn't worshipped, hadn't said that to me, I probably would have died of alcoholism. No.
But it shows you how we just have to be open always to opportunity. And also, you had no idea. Being new and being green sometimes is not knowing the rules a lot of times is what gets us a foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you go in thinking you know all the rules, mm-hmm. you're not real, you're not yourself.
No, no.
And you're overly prepared. Well, darling, you were not prepared at all, but that's what got you in.
Underprepared.
But amazing that they saw the spark in you.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah. And so when you graduated from the academy, you came back to New York City, right? Or you moved to New York City.
Yep.
You started doing theater, right?
I moved to New York City, and I was living on the West Side, and my father had just sent me enough to cover my rent, which was like $100 and some a month. I mean, you know, in those days you could get rent control apartments. And I was expecting my trunk to arrive. I don't think you know this story. It's hysterical. And the bell goes ding dong, and I'm in a basement apartment. You know, I'm on the ground floor. And dumbbell, you know, I'd never lived in New York. I opened the door, and there was this huge man about 6'4", with a box. And he said, "Delivery," and he came walking in to my apartment. And he opened the box and pulled out this fur coat, ugly fur coat. And he said, "You want to buy a fur coat, lady?" And I said, "No." He said, "Yeah, I think you do." I said, no, I only have enough money for my rent." He said, "How much money do you have?" I said, "I have $173. "You can have the coat for $173. I said, "No, you don't understand. It looks too big for me." He said, "Try it on." So the only mirror I had was on the kitchen wall. It was very high up, so I had to stand on a chair in front of this criminal and try on this ugly coat. It was muskrat. I mean, it was way too big. It wasn't ugly. It was new, but it looked terrible on me. It was too big. It was for a big, fat person. And so I'm standing on a chair looking in a mirror saying, "It doesn't really fit." He said, "It looks good." So he takes my money, and he leaves. Thank God he didn't rape me or kill me. And I called the police. I said, "Listen, some man just came in here and sold me a mink coat." Oh, he said it was a mink. It was a muskrat.
He
said, "It's a mink coat." I said, "I want my rent money back." And so these two policemen arrived. They said, "Lady, that's not a mink. That's a muskrat." I said, "I don't care what it is." I said, "I just want my $173 back." They said, "Well, we'll buy it from you." I said, "Well, if the police want to buy it, it must be a good coat." And I thought, no. "I think I'll keep it." They said, "Okay, lady, do what you want." They left. I made some fur pillows out of it. And that was my introduction to New York.
To the mob.
To New York. Don't open your door.
Don't open the door to strangers. But you went on to do theater and Broadway.
A lot of Broadway.
And then what was your very first soap opera role?
Oh, my first soap opera role. I was Gene Stapleton's husband, Bill Pacetta Theater in Pennsylvania. It's coming to me. Anyway, I was doing a play called Natalie Needs a Nighty, and you only got sides. You only got sides. You know, you didn't even get the full script. You know, and it was a farce. Naturally, Natalie Needs a Nighty has got to be a farce. And I got a call to come back for a callback for a CBS soap called Love of Life, 1967. And I said, "I'm not going to go." And also, I was sick. I'm always sick when I get callbacks and things. I don't know why that is. And so Gene Stapleton said, "You're going to go. I'm going to get you up in the morning. I'm going to drive you to the airport. And so put curlers in your hair and blah, blah, blah." She was so dear. She was the sweetest woman on the planet. And so she drove me to the airport. And it was supposed to be an English woman, an English psychiatrist. And so when I arrived, I was really tired and I didn't feel well. And they said, "We want all you actresses to know that she's not English anymore." And I said, "Oh, I've got to leave because I can't do an American accent."
Your RADA training.
I can't do an American accent. I thought, I want out of here. I don't care anymore. They said, no, please don't leave. I said, no, I can't do an American accent. And so I went in, and they said, what do you think of the script? I said, it's extremely boring. And all the network people went, what? I said, well, you want it to be a sexual scene, and they're ordering a cup of tea. I said, you know, how sexual is that? Well, she's right. This is a terrible scene. You know, and that, I mean, I just didn't care. I didn't care. So
you got it.
So I got the part. Yeah. So I was on for 2 years.
And that was it live in those days, or was that?
No, that one wasn't live. But when I did Edge of Night, it was live.
And you have a great story about.
Oh my God! Should I sell that?
Yeah.
Should I tell that one?
Yeah.
Oh, this is my favorite. Well, there are a lot of live faux pas that happened on daytime, and these are all actually real. But this is my favorite one of all time. An 18-year-old boy was like on As the World Turns or Search for Tomorrow, one of them, and he's supposed to go ding dong. Hello, Mrs. Starr. I have come to call on your daughter. She said, well, sit down. She's upstairs. I'll go get her. Instead of which, he was fine at dress rehearsal, but live, he said, ding dong. Hello, Mrs. Starr. I've called to come on your daughter. She said, oh, well, sit down. She's upstairs. I'll go get her. You know, I mean, you just had to say the next line.
You had to roll with it.
You know, and I mean, people said, did he? She, I'll call. Come on, her daughter. I mean, and there was, Anne Flood did one on Edge of Night, and it was live. And she was a perfect lady, and she was so embarrassed that this happened. She and her husband were supposed to be going, you know, darling, sometimes it's really hard to wake up in the morning. And her next line was, yes, I've noticed. And then the organ went, the Edge of Night,
dun, 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 dun.
And the organ can come in and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Instead of which, it went like this. Her husband said, you know, honey, sometimes it's really hard to get it up in the morning. And she couldn't think of anything else to say but her line, which was, yes, I've noticed. And the cameraman started shaking. The cameras
laughing.
Literally were going up and down. It was live. Everybody was laughing. Dixie Carter and Donald May were doing a love scene on Edge of
this
Night.
This is the one I was
live.
Thinking of.
And the stage manager, who was a bald, kind of cherubic, plump, sweet man, tripped on a cable. And he had a script in his hand and fell between them on the sofa while they were having a love scene. And they played the love scene around this fat man.
Like
he was supposed to be there in that love scene.
Guess who came for dinner?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, before the time runs out, I just wanted to get us right up to All My Children and tell everyone how the part of Mary and Colby came in, because that was supposed to be just a...
3 months.
3 months.
3 months. And, well, I got hit in the face. I got tomatoes thrown at me. People hated me. They were doing comedy. Everybody was doing comedy. And I said, you know, I've got to be funny. You know, I'm not going to last unless I am a funny villain. I had done The Homecoming on Broadway, and I'd met Harold Pinter. And he talks in sexual pauses. Like, you go up to Harold Pinter and you go, Mr. Pinter, I love your suit. What kind of suit is that? And he goes, thank you very much. It's a Saint Laurent. And I go, Jesus, he talks in sexual pauses. So I thought, I'm going to do this with Marion Colby. I am going to talk in sexual pauses. If I'm with a man 70 years or younger, I'm going to pause in a significant point in the dialogue to make it funny. So like, if my line was, would you like a bite of my hamburger? I go, would you like a bite of my hamburger? And the writers got it, and they started writing it. And suddenly I was like this Mae West-type alcoholic nymphomaniac.
Sleeping
and
with her daughters.
I think the most, but the worst thing I ever did is Marion Colby. I think this is one of the worst. My husband, in my first 2 years on the show, died. And I made a pass at a doctor over his coffin. Now, that is pretty gross, honey.
Well,
that's pretty gross.
That and sleeping with your daughter's husband.
Well, no. Oh, yeah. Well, I slept with all her husbands.
Yeah.
But you see, her boyfriend, Tad, he was my boyfriend first. And everyone said, how can you sleep with their daughter's boyfriend? I said, I slept with him first. So get off your high hat, honey.
Marion was the original cougar.
The original cougar in 1982.
1982, you were whatever, and Michael E. Knight was
19. He was really 21, but he was playing 19.
Right. Yeah. He was legal, barely.
Yeah, but we had, oh my God, we laughed. We had such a good time.
But the 3 month role turned into an almost 30-year off and
over on. Over 30-year, on and off. They brought me back. You'd be out in L.A. working, and you'd get a call saying, we'd like to bring your character back for a year or two. Do you want to come back? And I'd say, sure. And it was like slipping into old clothes.
Shoes.
You know, when you're at home and you put on your old bathrobe that you like, that no one sees, but you love it.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's like. And you know who you are right away. I mean, there's nothing. Very few actors get to play a role for 30 years.
Well, also, you were one of the few daytime actresses at the time that really transitioned and did nighttime. You did sitcoms. You did one-hour shows.
When I came out here, nobody would see me because I was a daytime actress.
There was
actress.
A stigma.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the first job I got was L.A. Law, and I just read Stephen Boschko's obituary.
Away.
I
Rest
was so
peace.
Sad. He was so young and so brilliant. I felt so horrible when I read that. I didn't read it the day before. It was 2 days
right.
ago.
He
wrote L.A. Law, and my first job was L.A. Law, and it was a wonderful part, and they had to cut it out. And my agent, Billy, said, Jennifer, I've got very bad news. They love you, and they're going to use you again. But they have to cut it all out. It just made Joel Eikenberry's character look unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, my God, Billy, it's my only footage. He said, they'll never give us the footage if it's never aired. And he begged them, and you know what? They gave us the footage.
Which
so
is
we had the
unheard
footage.
Of.
And that got me,
Other.
The doors open. They said, you're in L.A. Oh, great footage, you know, and that got me started here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you couldn't get anybody to look at you.
No. And it's interesting how now all the film actors have come to television, and there's no stigma with daytime, nighttime.
Oh, no. Most of our big stars have come out of daytime.
Exactly.
The problem is we have 4 soap operas in Los Angeles, and we have none in New York.
Right.
And this was a training ground. This teaches you how to relax in front of a camera.
Yeah.
Now, there's no training ground for actors anymore.
No.
Young actors to learn how to do movies.
Well, no, because everybody's trying to be a YouTube star and an internet star.
But they're not going to get camera technique or learn about lighting and cameras and what to do and what not to do.
Exactly. Well, tell everybody where they can follow you on social media. You're on all the Instagram, Twitter.
I think I'm Jennifer Bassey 1 on Twitter.
Right. Instagram.
And I'm on Instagram, but I don't know.
At Jennifer Bassey.
Is that? I don't know what it is.
I think it's at Jennifer _ Bassey. Just
this I don't know because my media woman, she does it. I mean, I tell her and I prove when we do it, but
right.
I don't know what it is.
But Google Jennifer Bassey, you'll see all of her.
And she's put together a great website.
And
we're
her
not
website.
Finished with it. We're not even start. We just barely did anything yet.
It's jennifer.bassey.com or .com?
JenniferBassey.com, yeah.
Yeah, and that's up to date with all what's happening with Jennifer. We didn't get to talk about her one-woman show that she's working on that will be Jennifer will come back. She'll do more.
Oh well, if I don't
more shows,
don't.
And
I better.
You know, I love you. I feel like you're family.
I love you more, and you are family.
And I'm going to be with you tomorrow night at the awards, and we'll all be cheering you on
at the
end of April for the Emmys.
I'm going to say that you've stuck through me through thin and thin.
And the legs are the last to go.
And
that's
then you
Jennifer's,
jump off a tall effing building.
Right. That's Miss Bassey's favorite last words. Well, listen, everyone. Thank you so much for joining 101 with Jasper Cole. Remember, Thursday, April 5th, we debut on the BS Podcast Networks. So this episode, I believe, will air on the 19th. We'll be on every other Thursday. And check us out on iTunes. So everyone, have a wonderful rest of the day. Peace out. We love you. Take care.
Thanks for checking out One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Check out past episodes and get the latest as they're released. Subscribe today on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube.
Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/backtoschool and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.